What's up, Zach Oates here, author, entrepreneur, and customer relationship guru. Welcome to Give an Ovation, growth strategies for restaurants and retailers, where we find industry leaders to share their secrets to grow your business. This podcast is sponsored by Ovation, the actionable guest feedback tool that works on or off premise and is easy, real time, and actually drives revenue. Learn more at ovationup.com. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Give an Ovation. I am here with Mark Kelnhofer. Mark, thanks for being with us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me today, Zach.
Absolutely. Just a little bit about Mark, if you don't know him, and if you don't, I am sorry, because you should. Let me tell you about Mark. He is a speaker, author, the president and CEO of Return on Ingredients and the Restaurant Institute. He has lectured at more universities than I have been to. And most recently, he has become a certified bourbon steward.
Yeah, isn't that awesome?
Yeah, I did.
I'm all trying to do something to add to the credentials.
Yeah, exactly. I know you go to his LinkedIn profile and you see all the places that he has lectured, and it is like dizzying. It's like a what most people look at schools, look at that many schools to apply to, and he's lectured at that many schools. So,
you know, right now I'm part of not only the Ohio State University, but Georgetown University's Global Hospitality Leadership Program. So it's kind of unique that I teach at both at the same time.
Yeah.
Both hospitality related.
Well, so Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit first before we jump into things? What does Return on Ingredients do? Who do you help? And why do people work with you?
Right. So I started Return on Ingredients in 2009. It's really a consulting company that specializes in cost identification, cost management, and menu engineering services. And so what we do is we really take a manufacturing or a manager or accounting approach to recipes. So instead of just looking at the ingredients, we're actually looking at the ingredients, the labor, and the overhead to come up with the total cost for every menu item. And it's really not that hard to do, but once you have that, it's a very powerful thing, because now your whole menu engineering changes. It's all about profit and driving cash. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. We want to see success. We want to be able to grow the companies. And in order to do that methodically, we do it by identifying the total cost of what we're looking at. And so historically, if you look back in the industry, you know, costs are generally done by looking at ingredients only. And I would say sometimes pretty good, you know, other times not so well, you know. So we've been to some places, for example, and one of the places we start at is the recipe documentation, where the recipe documentation itself is so poorly written that you already know they don't know the cost of the ingredients. And they certainly probably are not even looking at labor or overhead as part of the recipe cost. So it's a specialty that we have. We really do that for emerging chains. We help them grow. It doesn't mean that we don't have some mom and pops we do this for, but emerging chains is our sweet spot, because we want to help them eventually become a chain. And by doing that, we're doing it in a much more methodical way, much more data driven. And we make sure at the end of the day that we're making money, we're increasing cash.
Because I totally see that, Mark. I mean, as I look at the story goes of their two brothers who were selling watermelons, they were buying them for a dollar each. They were selling them for a dollar each. At the end of the day, they looked at their wallets and they were like, the one brother turns to the other and says, you know what we need? A bigger truck, right?
Taking it to that level, like what we do, you really don't have the confidence that you're making money. It's still kind of a guessing game that you're covering all of your costs. You might be able to say that 30% food cost is our goal, but at the end of the day, it's all about the profit, not the food cost percentage.
Exactly.
And that's really where we try to change the disciplines, to make sure that when we're looking at taking items on and off a menu, that we're definitely much more methodical and make sure that we don't make a mistake, because it's too easy to make a mistake. You know, if you didn't have the data and you based it on quantities sold, for example, right? you very well could have made a mistake, shot yourself in the foot, not knowing that you just dropped profitability. So it's not always about quantity. It's not always about cost percentages. But the one thing it is about the profitability of the dish.
I like that. So, you know, someone's listening right now. What should they be wondering? What should they, what are some questions that they should be asking themselves as we're stepping into the new normal?
Well, I don't know if you, have you ever been through the process of actually costing out recipes or menus or anything like that. I don't know if you have, but
you know, I was the bus boy, and then I did the register.
Well, it can be a very it's a very time consuming task, and it doesn't matter if you, what type of software you have, or if you're on Excel, or it doesn't matter. It's going to be something that is much easier to maintain than create. So if we have to create from scratch, you know, it's going to take a little time to build up all these recipes, because we account for every process. We don't skip anything. If there is a process, we have a recipe for it. And so what I tell people all the time is, at a minimum, what they should do is kind of audit those recipes for their completeness, because they might be surprised how many things go undocumented, or how many things that may or may not have an accurate yield on, which is huge. Yields are required. And before we even get into a costing project, I look at the completeness of the recipe, and it tells me a big story already. So if I walk into one location and they have very little documented, it tells me quite a bit about that operation already. They don't know their costs. They can't train properly because it's not documented properly, right? And so there's food safety and quality and consistency. All these things are wrapped up into this recipe, right? Mm. The recipes are so critical for the operation. And so when they're incomplete, I can guarantee you there's going to be issues one way or another. It can, whether it's profitability, consistency, quality, it's all linked to that recipe document. And to run a business, you need to have complete recipe documentation. So there was a chef one time at a conference I was teaching at, about one of the segments we did was the art of recipe writing, because it's more difficult than what you think. There's all kinds of parts and pieces that we need for a recipe. It's not just the ingredients and utensils, but it's methods and food safety and equipment and tools and prep time and all that. You know, there's all kinds of parts and pieces to document this recipe to run a business. And I had a chef one time tell me at culinary school, he said, they don't teach us to do this in culinary school. They teach us how to write a recipe for a cookbook, but not really to run a business.
Interesting.
Very different. So, you know, one of the things I tell people to look at is really take a good look at the recipe completeness, and then we can maybe take a look at costing as well. But costing can be time consuming. And the one thing I always tell people after, when I show them how to do it, you know, at my conferences that I go to, the ones I hold, I tell them, you know, at the end of the day, when we do these costs, the costing for it, we want to make sure it's as complete as possible. And that means not only are we looking at the ingredients, we're looking at labor standards, we're looking at overhead, and it does take some time. And the good entrepreneurs are the ones that realize when they need help. Mm-hmm. That's really, truly what for me, that's really, truly, a lot of times entrepreneurs have that, I want to do it, I should be able to do it. And they make an attempt, but it may not be a great attempt. But the ones that really want to get from point A to point B, when they realize they might not be able to do something, they hire somebody to do it. And that's really, you know, at the end of the day, I'd rather have them hire people like me or Don Burns or David Scott Peters or any of those guys, right? You know, to help them out in making sure they understand their cost structure, because if they don't, a likelihood of not making it's dramatically high.
So have you seen, is it, when is it too late to do that? Or is it never too late?
Good question. Well, I don't know if there's a hard answer to that. So I'm going to answer it like this. My first client in 2009, was a high-end fine dining restaurant that contacted me, and they were losing money. So of course, what's the first thing I look at? The recipes, right? The recipe documentation is the first thing I look at when I go into any operation. And when I went into that operation, they didn't have any recipes. So that tells you right out of the gate, don't know cost, can't train, quality, consistency, all of that, right? And they were losing money. I found out through their income statement, they were losing money for 6 months straight. And I said, you know, it may already be too late, because when you have quality consistency issues for that long, it may be very difficult to turn that business around. You know, and so there is a discipline to go through and actually create these recipe costs and develop a profitable menu. But there's something to be said also for how long can you continue on with the lack of quality or consistency, and because it hurts your business every time.
Oh, and it's so hard to break those habits from retrain your employees.
Right? Yeah. One bad experience is all it takes. And sometimes it's not with the kitchen staff. It could be with the service too, right? So it doesn't take much to lose a guest. They're hard to get. Our repeat guests are hard to retain, but it's easy to lose one. And so, you know, 6 months, I was able to turn that one around, but it could have been a different story.
You know? Yeah.
And it, unfortunately, sometimes people go through the motions and they have losses for consecutive months and they act like it's normal when it's not. You know, it's not normal to lose money. We need to make sure that you're making money, you're actually driving cash. That's really so important. Cash is king at the end of the day, right?
Now, with that cash being king, have you found that, you know, as expenses are going up, as revenue is going down, what can people do to bridge that gap? What are some ways that you found that people can look at to save some money without cutting?
Not ways to react, right? And yeah. So what I tell people all the time is we want to react in a very methodical way. We want to make sure we understand cost structure and numbers. But when we make decisions, we don't want to make decisions off a gut feel or this is what I did the last time or anything like that. We want to make sure we have data-driven decisions. And so, you know, an example might be where commodity costs have skyrocketed on a particular commodity. We can react in a number of different ways. We can find an alternative ingredient, cut down portion sizes. There's all kinds of things we can do. Maybe we go out and negotiate a contract that will get us better pricing down the road. So there's things on how to react. And unfortunately, a lot of companies don't react with a whole lot of data. And in some cases, not a whole lot of data at all, right? I remember I asked a chef one time, he showed me this dish, and he has a lot of pride, right? There's art. There's the art of the business, and there's numbers to business. And he had a lot of pride in the art. He showed me this dish, and he loved everything about it. You know, the presentation, the flavor profile, everything. And he said, I'm going to sell for $26.95. I said, well, how'd you come up with that? He goes, well, a competitor across the street has it for $26.95. So he wasn't basing it on his own internal cost. He was basing it off of what a competitor has. So I asked him a question. It says, do you know if your competitor's making money? And of course he says, no, I have no clue, right? I go, do you know what our cost is on this particular dish? And he said, no, I have not a clue. I go, well, we need to know what our cost is so we can be methodical. We have to be, at the end of the day, for us to survive, we're gonna have to make sure we're making money. Because if you're not out to make money, it's gonna be an expensive hobby, isn't it?
Wow, yeah. And you know, we both got our MBAs, and one of the things that I did was I actually took a whole semester course all on pricing from one of the nation's foremost pricing experts. And it was fascinating to see the different types of ways that people will price things. And the only real way to truly know if you have it priced right is to see who pulls out their wallet to buy it. And you get to a certain point that once, you know, you could increase the price, and typically outside of like safety and certain experiences, the more you increase it, typically the less people buy it. But then you have to hit that breaking point where it peaks and curves down, where there's less people buying, so few people buying it that you're not making the money. So to find that,
I've seen cases where I've been at, where in the past what they did, the answer was always to increase price, right? When I said, well, that's not always the answer. There's all kinds of other things we can do, because if we can reduce costs somewhere, then we also increase profitability, right? Without raising price.
Exactly.
So a lot of times you can't, although price is one way to increase profits, right? You increase your price. It's not the only answer. And so this particular restaurant company, that was like the answer every time, price, 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 price. And eventually I said, you know what? Looking at your history of price increases, you've almost priced yourself outside the concept, meaning that they were a fast casual, but now the price point's at a point where you're almost fine dining, right?
Yeah.
You've got a price point where it's way much higher. The value perception is lower, right? Volumes are going to drop, which they did. You know, repeat customers dropping. So you got to be careful about pricing for sure, and the number of times that you can increase price, because the guest perception and the guest, the guests are not, they realize when price increases happen. You may not realize it, but they realize it. They know for sure when a price has gone up on their favorite dish, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I always tell this story about, I had this client that boosted the price of the coffee from $2.95 to $3. And you would have thought World War III happened. Right, because that many people were complaining about it. I can't believe you raised the price of my coffee. It was a very noticeable price increase. But you broke a price barrier, right? It went from a $2.95 hit the $3 point. Very noticeable.
And so I guarantee you, they would have had a much less feedback if they just would have gone to $2.99 instead of $3. Right. Yeah.
So I've seen also where there's been wacky pricing. So I'll give you an example where, let's say they did ingredient costing and their goal was 30% food cost. So they just take whatever the cost is, divide by 0.3, and wherever it lands, that's the price, right? And so you'll see these menus that says $12.92, right? Or $13.37, and just these pricing amounts that make no sense at all, right? They just, wherever it lands, that's they went and they publish it that way.
Yep.
So it's interesting how people choose how they price something.
Well, and Mark, as a final word, because we definitely have to have you back on this podcast. I know you are just like a treasure trove of knowledge and tips. But what would be, for this podcast, what would be your final piece of advice to listeners and viewers?
Well, since this is really, we're talking about cost management pretty much with the ingredients and labor and overhead, it's not that difficult to get there. So I would say, for now, in the environment that we're in, cost structures now have changed dramatically, right? And so we have to make sure, we have to go revisit what that is for us. We have to actually, although our ingredients may not have changed that much since all this has happened, the piece that has changed a lot is the overhead piece, right? And so people don't really look at that a whole lot. And I always tell people this, that since I started doing this in 2009, it used to be, way back then, it used to be ingredients was the top cost, direct labor is the second, overhead was the third largest cost, right? And I think now that has changed completely. I really think that the labor piece now is probably the larger piece, maybe even overhead, second largest, and the ingredients are the last piece, the cheapest piece of cost. And so we have to change people's mindsets in making sure that when they're looking at recipe costing, it's not just about the ingredients. And if that's all they're looking at, they're probably looking at the smallest piece, right? And they're not really looking at the two pieces that are going to cause them more heartburn, which is the overhead and the labor that they have. especially on the labor side, increase. We got to increase minimum wages, increase. Sometimes those minimum wages doesn't even matter. You have increased rates just because of the market they're in. And of course, benefits are higher because of that too. And then the overhead is something that people very rarely look at, but they control. There's fixed overhead and variable overhead. They do control some overhead costs that we can respond to. You know, they can't respond to depreciation and not a whole lot can they respond to rents or leases, but maybe they can negotiate some relief there. But there are variable components of overhead that they can have an effect on. And those are the parts and pieces I think we've got to start looking at to help these restaurants make it through, you know, who knows how long this new normal is, but to make it through and be profitable under a new model is really what they have to do.
Love so, that.
You know, if they don't know how to do it, they really should ask for help, because I think that this may last longer than what we think. And we want to make sure that under the new model, they're able to drive cash and profitability.
Yep. Absolutely. So here are my four takeaways. One, make sure you measure the most important thing, which is profitability, and look at that holistically, labor, ingredients, overhead. It's not just one of those things. Two, document recipes in detail. Really look at it in terms of you know, imagine that you're going to open up 100 new locations next year. What do you need documented to make sure that those locations are successful? Three, make data-driven decisions, not off of your gut, not off of what happened. We're in new territory here, baby. And number four, reevaluate cost structures. Now is a good time. If you haven't done it, do it now, because don't want it to be too late.
I think that's dead on, and maybe you can have me back again for like, I could talk about the art of recipe writing, and we could talk 15 minutes just on the recipe documentation with all the details, and maybe that'll be something that will help your group too.
I think that is a great thing. Let me just take a note on that right now, because I think that the recipe documentation, how to do it, what to think about, absolutely. So Mark, how do people find you, follow you?
Yeah, so I have two websites. One is returnoningredients.com. The other one's restaurantinstitute.com. And they can follow me on Twitter as well at ROI Ingredients. And then also I have a publication called Food, Beverage, and Labor Cost Control Quarterly. So if you go to fblmag.com, that's a free subscription. So I invite your group to subscribe to that as well. And then, of course, my phone number, they can reach me. I'm the most accessible person in the United States, maybe. 614-558-2239. They can call me anytime.
Awesome. Mark, thank you so much for coming on. Today's ovation goes to you for helping these restaurants figure out their cost structure, for improving, for helping everyone to stay alive and stay fed. Appreciate you, Mark.
Yeah, appreciate it, Zach. We'll touch base soon.
Okay. Glad you're with us today, and thank you. Thank you to the risk takers, the troublemakers, the crazies who are keeping this world clothed and fed. You're the ones who deserve an ovation. Again, this podcast was sponsored by Ovation. To see how we can help you grow your business, go to ovationup.com. Don't forget to subscribe, and as always, remember to give someone in your life an ovation today.